Hi, you're listening to episode 50 of Attention Plus right here on Talking Stuff Network, and I'm Vikram Mohan. We are recording on 4th August 2019 India time. Did I just say 50? Yep. We've hit the half century mark and also completed a year. So happy birthday to the podcast. And I can't even begin to thank you all for sticking around during the last year, but suffice to say, just thank you. A big thank you from all of us. And 50 weeks in, we have a very special guest today, or actually host, because she has in the past hosted an entire episode by herself. And we have a special message from her again for today's podcast.
I think we should congratulations, Bobo. I think we should give him the best prize that any podcaster can give, that any podcaster can get, because he's my father.
So tell our audience, what have you been doing recently? What books have you read recently?
I've been reading. I'm just starting the first book of the Chronicles of Narnia.
And
I'm in the fifth book of Harry Potter. I might be in the 20th or something chapter.
Okay, and you've also been reading some books from the library, right?
I'm reading Black Beauty as well. Yeah, and also this summer, I got enrolled into the YMCA on Corbin Avenue here. And then I'm taking swimming lessons, and all the other classes I'm going to I'm on the waiting list because they got enrolled in the start of the month. And I was in the middle of. I started in the middle of.
And you scored a goal in soccer. Remember?
Yeah, and I took a soccer class, and I scored a goal for the blue team. And then I took basketball class too. Volleyball, I was learning. I was trying to throw the ball, but I was a bit bad at it.
What about your cooking class?
Cooking class was good, but I threw mostly all of them away. Because I only could use very few of them to make the face I wanted to put on the sugar cookie.
And then which class will you be in?
I'll be in first grade this month, probably on the 24th or something.
Yes. So Anahita is going to be in first grade, so she's going to start the actual school process. She was in kindergarten last year. Thank you for coming to the show. Now we will go and talk about other
so
things.
Okay, bye-bye. Since we had the other host as well, now let's get back our regular host. Arnab, how are you, and how do you sum up the last year from the podcast?
So first of all, I would like to thank everybody who has listened to this podcast for the last year. Honestly, when I started the podcast, I was highly skeptical. I honestly didn't feel that we would make it past the first few weeks. So the fact that we are still talking here for 50 episodes down and after a year is a testament to, you know, the efforts of Vikram, most importantly. And also to my listeners, I've got in the only way this, the only reason why we come back is because of the feedback that we receive. And, you know, the Patreon contributions don't hurt either, but overall, it is the feedback that we receive on Twitter and on WhatsApp, and when people say that that this podcast is now part of their weekly routine, that they look forward to it, look forward to listening to it on their Monday commute, I think that's pretty much the most important validation that we can get when you're part of somebody's lives. I mean, as an artist, I would say that's really the high water mark. That's really where you want to be. We would, of course, like to have, want to have more people listen to our podcast. But even more important than that, I think, you know, rather than the pure numbers, is the fact that for those who have been following this podcast and been regular listeners for the last year, the fact that you think that this is worth following, that I understand, and all of us understand that in this day and age, every minute of your time, there is a lot of competition. So there's Netflix, and there is Twitter, and there is TikTok. So there's enormous amount of competition for your time. And the fact that we are able to win about an hour or so of your time every week is the most important thing that I can think of that has made at least my last year been, you know, pretty good. I've really enjoyed doing this. I have gotten, actually, I like doing this more right now than writing my blog. And many people who used to like to write the blog say, why don't you write more blogs? Because I just feel that I'm getting more, you know, more better feedback from this podcast. And when I started it, I thought that would be the case. I had this hypothesis that people have time to consume audio media nowadays because of their schedules, whether they're in a gym or whether they're driving to work, that there is some time that they get when they can listen to things. However, they don't have that time to read. And the fact that, you know, a year into this podcast, that suspicion, let's say, has been confirmed is good. It's good when you make a prediction and it works. So thank you, everyone. And before we start today's episode, I would like to thank some of our new Patreon contributors, Reviraj Mahatme, Subramaniam Iyer, Kingshuk Kaushik, Nandini, Srivatsa, and Kawaljeet. Again, for those of you who don't know, and of course you do know, if you've been listening to the podcast regularly, because I keep mentioning it, we have our Patreon page where you can be a monthly contributor to the podcast. And again, would like to thank all of you who have contributed to the podcast and would again appreciate more people contributing to the podcast. That's obvious. So for today, what I have is I wanted to do something a little bit different than what I normally do, this being the 1 year anniversary and 50th episode and what have you. So a few days ago, I had done this tweet thread. It was totally spontaneous. I read a tweet which says, what should you do to, you know, when you're unhappy, what should you do to be happy? I mean, how do you gain your happiness back? So I made a few tweets and I found that it got a lot of engagement, those tweets. I didn't expect them to get a lot of engagement. So I thought I would spend this episode to kind of elaborate on some of the ideas that I expressed. Again, sometimes the problem with tweets, not the problem, but that's really the essence of a tweet, is its brevity. And while brevity, especially when you're dispensing advice, brevity is very powerful, but also it leaves a lot of things to be unsaid. And often it comes across as, you know, gross oversimplifications of very complicated problems. So I thought I would take this time to maybe do a deeper dive into some of the things that I said in the tweet thread. So let's start off. Yeah.
Yeah. The pursuit of happiness.
The pursuit of happiness. And again, I, whenever I say things like this, I'm always conscious of coming across as, you know, those who will fulminate against the vegetarian brain, or, you know, the gurus and the
crooked non-veg brain.
Crooked non-veg brain. And I am talking to you. You are talking to me. I am talking to myself. You know, I'm afraid of coming across that way. That's inevitable whenever you're trying to dispense advice on things like happiness, which is, people have been dispensing advice on this for as long as I presume that we have been human beings. So there is always that hesitance. You kind of cringe and you're worried that you're not becoming that kind of self-help guru who you have grown up despising. So given that, but the reason why I think that this is the right time to talk about it is, I wouldn't have talked about happiness. If those of you who have read my blog know that I would never have done this 10 years ago. I would have never done this even 5 years ago. Because I don't think that I was even at a stage in life where I even understood many of these things. It's one thing to read books and to regurgitate them, but it's another thing to actually live those experiences. And what I'm going to say to you is based on my own life experience. It's not something which I read somewhere. And people might, at the end of the episode, say there was nothing really profound or nothing really, really original about what Arnab said. And it might very well be the case. But these are the things which I have observed over. And I would say the last 2 years have been, you know, very tough on me. And I don't want to go into the details of that because I don't want to make this podcast a personal drying of dirty laundry in front of everyone. There is always this, I don't want to make this about myself. This podcast is not a personal log. Even my blog was never a personal log. So I try to keep myself as much away from it as possible. This was true for the blog, that this is true for the podcast. So while I will not go into the details of the exact incidents or as to where much of this is coming from, I think that's not even important. I think what's more important are the lessons learned. And engineers love to say this at the end of a project. What were the lessons learned? And most people, when they listen, of course, there's always a lessons learned at the end of a project, and nobody really takes those lessons learned with any form of seriousness. But in any organization which claims to collect metrics and do process improvement, there is always this lessons learned. So having been in software, I take lessons learned with both a pinch of salt as well as with some amount of respect, because I think that's really when you, if you're an organization which keeps on doing the same thing and you don't have lessons learned, then you're not going anywhere as an organization. And similarly, it's the same thing as a person. As a person, unless you stop and reflect on what's happening to you, I believe you're little better than an animal, because the thing about animals is they're very spontaneous. That's the source of their greatest joy, but that's really what doesn't make them human. And what makes us human is our ability to reflect and wonder on why things happened the way they did. So let's go to, you know, the form, what I believe works for being happy, at least what works for me. It might not work for anybody else. So the first thing, one of the things that I love to do is that I love to remember. Again, most self-help books will possibly tell you that this is the absolute wrong thing to do. That, you know, when you're sad, the last thing you should do is you should go back in the past. That it is future that it carries with it hope. BS. Okay. The fact about the past, and let's take a, you know, try to understand what I mean by the past. So from a those of you who know me know that I love to listen to 90s music and 90s movies. And one of the things, the reasons why I do it is because it actually makes me happy. The familiarity of those tunes, the fact that I can tune in and watch Gunta, you know, the 17th time. I mean, they make me happy. They make genuinely make me happy because they allow me to feel the same sensations that I felt when I saw them for the first time. And in case this doesn't make sense, what I'm saying, let's talk about things which might not make even more sense. So the famous philosopher and mathematician, forgive me if I'm not pronouncing it correctly, but Descartes. Descartes made this very, very famous statement, "I exist, therefore I am." So what does that mean? So what? Just a little bit of background. So Descartes, who's credited with much of the analytical geometry that we currently do in the sense of axioms and postulates, at the end of his life, he decided to take a break from mathematics and go into the realms of philosophy, especially to answer the question, does God exist? This often happens to mathematicians once they cross a certain boundary of age. And so his whole intent was, in all my life, I've talked about axioms, but should I have talked about axioms? Is there anything really, truly correct? If the shortest distance between two points is a straight line, how do I even know that those points exist? How do I know that the straight line is a line? Do my senses deceive me? For those of you who are steeped in Eastern philosophy, you would know that this is not a new concept in Eastern philosophy, that the whole notion of Maya is based on that, that what we see is not what the truth is, and that the truly enlightened being is the one who can see truth for what it is. And for those of you, this is the Matrix idea. This is exactly what the Matrix is, that the aliens have taken over the world and have kept us in pods, and that whatever we can perceive as reality is, you know, the Matrix, which is kind of a virtual reality game that they have immersed us in, and that nothing there is real, and that Neo, once he realizes that none of this is real, so he can bend the rules the way he wants by basically changing the code, so he can, you know, fly, he can, you know, do all the other crazy things, bullets can't kill him. So that's when he realizes that all of these are essentially constructs of the Matrix. None of this is true. This is really what Descartes was trying to find out. So what is real? When I look in the mirror and I see myself, is that real? Do I actually have two eyes and a nose, or am I just being fooled into believing maybe I'm an insect and maybe all of this is just some form of tricking my mind, tricking my senses? So if I perceive the world, how do I know that the world exists? So I'm just basically a molecule floating in some jar of jelly, and there are electrodes attached to this molecule, which is just simulating reality. So his solution to it was that the only thing that I can truly trust, the only thing that I know is absolutely true, is the fact that I am thinking right now of this very fact. The fact that I am contemplating whether I exist, therefore I am. That the fact that I'm thinking of myself, that is the only truth. And the fact that I'm thinking it makes me exist. So my identity is defined by my instantaneous thought about myself. Now, I've always had a problem with this definition. While it's a thing wrong with it, it kind of takes out a very important thing. So right now, if the fact that if we presume that everything in front of us is false, the fact that I'm thinking about that and the fact that Vikram is thinking about that makes me equal to Vikram in terms of our eyes, which is absolutely not true. I as in the alphabet I. There is a place where Vikram and I diverge, and that's the path he has taken. Right now, we are together in this moment on this podcast, but the path he took to get to this moment and the path that I have taken to get to this moment are different. And it's different for every human being in this world. Whenever we come to a moment, we come by different paths. And the thing that captures this path is our memories. So for me, our memories define who we are. And when we lose our memories and people have dementia, we essentially reduce ourselves to the Descartesian concept of I, in the sense that I live only in the moment, but I have no memory of how I got there. So our consciousness, according to me, and this is not again, nothing here is original, it comes from the fact that I have memories. So the fact that I have, and many people say, why do you remember all these bizarre things from the 90s? Even I was there in the 90s. I don't remember these things. Well, that is what distinguishes me from you. The fact that I chose to remember those things, and you possibly chose to remember a different set of things. The fact that I chose to remember a Sachin Tendulkar innings, or the fact that I chose to remember Vinod Kambli crying, or the fact that I chose to remember some songs from some vague movies, is what defines me. And maybe you remember other things. Like, for instance, I may be forgetting the anniversary of my wife. You know, that's an important thing, but I'm forgetting that. But that is because I am I. And that is an important thing for us to understand, that our memories, our memories is what defines who we are. A few weeks ago, I think it's a week, not even a few weeks, but Rutger Hauer, who played... who was in this movie called Blade Runner. Have you seen the movie Blade Runner, Vikram?
I've seen it way, way ago, about 10 years ago. No, I didn't see the new one, though.
No, the new one. And the new one is good, but it's not, let's say, it's nowhere as good as the original one.
Yes, agree.
The new one is essentially an action flick. Exactly. Well, the old one was an
science fiction.
Yes, but it was also about a contemplation of what humanity is. So for those of you who haven't seen it, I won't spoil it for you, but it's about this robot hunter who's going out killing robots. So they're called replicants. And at the end, one of these robots or replicants, he kind of confronts, and he's going to die. And what he tries to say is that, you know, I'm not a robot in the way you think of a robot. I have become a human. So how does he define his humanity? And how does he say it? He doesn't say, I have become human. Okay. So he says these lines, which apparently Rutger Hauer made up on the spot, apparently. But these are some of the most famous lines in filmdom.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time. Like tears in rain.
So again, it's this beautifully poetic, you know, tears lost in time, like tears in the rain. But what he's trying to say at this point of time is that I have memories. There are things which I have remembered. See, that's what distinguishes a human being from a computer. A computer has no choice on what to remember. A computer remembers whatever somebody tells them to remember. Once the hard drive space becomes full, it starts overwriting. So there is no conscious I in choosing what memories to keep and what memories to say. There is no notion of understanding the structure of the memory. So what he says at the end is, I understand the structure of my memories. I am a human being. I have humanity. I understand who I am. So he understands that the only way that we define ourselves is through our memories. Then all of this is basically a long-winded way of saying that when you are sad, discover who you are. And the only way you can discover who you are is by going back into your memories. To going back to a place in time when you feel that you were happy. Because remember, what is in your memory cannot be changed. Everything else, the present, present plus one, present plus two, everything can change. You have no control over what that will be. The only thing you have control over is what is there in your mind already. What has already happened. That for me is very, very important. That's why whenever I feel sad, I try to retreat into these comforting nooks in my past. You know, it could be an evening, could be just a moment. But when everything kind of came together, and for all of us, if you think, you will find that there were these times or, you know, days or even moments where everything came together, where it was perfect. And it's often when you are depressed, you lose track of that. You feel everything is terrible, but everything isn't terrible. And if you try to find good things in your future, it's you're likely going to be disappointed. But there are definitely good things in your past, and they might not be many. I mean, we've all taken different paths. Some people, maybe Anand Ambani has way more good things to remember than I have, or maybe not. I don't know him. But it's more likely that he does. But it does not mean that you don't have any. You do have. And for me, I find that the easiest way of getting into that mode is to listen to Bollywood. And that's because I have kind of anchored myself around Bollywood in the 90s. And I realized that it might not be the same for everyone. So that it could be a favorite book that you want to read. It might be Harry Potter. Maybe you grew up with Harry Potter. I didn't grow up with Harry Potter, by the way. Not that generation, a generation before that. So maybe it could be Harry Potter. For me, Mahabharat, Bollywood, cricket, and taste of biryani, I don't get it in the US. I don't get that biryani. So whenever people give me biryani, it's biryani, but it's not 90s biryani. It's not biryani from Bedouin. So I never get, so that's why I don't enjoy biryani anymore. Plus, I always feel guilty for eating so many carbs. That's another problem. Okay, which brings me to the second thing that I want to say, which is absolutely, if you're sad, stay off social media. So social media, the purpose of social media is for people to show how great their lives are. And if you look at the aggregate, structure of social media, it's always happy. It's the individual which is sad. And the individual is lying on social media. All of them are lying. I'm lying on social media. So for me, whenever I post on social media, it's always these great moments. You know, look at me in front of this nice mountain. Look at me with my article in Times of India. Look at my book cover. It is never really, it's only a small fraction of what my life actually is. And I think it's true for everybody else. And the guy who's checking into, who thinks that it's it's amazing that he's checking into a first class lounge. He's trying to tell us, look how great my life is. And a guy who takes a picture of himself in the gym with bulging biceps is trying to validate the fact, look, I have biceps. Look at how awesome that I am. So you never see people with a paunch posting their picture on, unless it's a before and you want to take credit for the after. Nobody takes it. Nobody, when they're going on a journey of getting fit, ever posts. Usually they don't post the picture of their paunch until and unless they've gotten rid of it. So this tells you that, you know, the fundamental experience that you get from social media is false. And Durkheim, you know, the Durkheim's famous, this was the only sociology thing that I read in engineering school. I don't know. Did you guys have Durkheim in engineering school?
No. Nothing.
So for some strange reason in Jadavpur University, we had Durkheim for some strange reason. And we had a full day on suicide. Maybe it says something about engineering. Yikes. That this one whole about suicide. But what Durkheim said about suicide was that this is of course counterintuitive, is that people don't usually kill themselves on winter days. They kill themselves on sunny days. They kill themselves, they feel that much more suicidal when everybody else has fun. So there are more suicides during Christmas. And this looks counterintuitive, right? No, it is not. The fact, and then there is this great, great line from As Good As It Gets.
We all have these terrible stories to get over, and you...
It's not true. Some of us have great stories, pretty stories that take place at lakes with boats and friends and noodle salad. Just no one in this car, but a lot of people. That's their story. Good times, noodle salad. What makes it so hard is not that you had it bad, but that you're that pissed that so many others had it good.
And where do you see other people having it good? On Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. So if you are dealing with sadness, like I have over the last few years, one thing that has always helped me is just stay off social media. It helps. Your life isn't as bad as you think it is in isolation, in general. It is only terrible when you compare it to other people's. And by social media, I also mean LinkedIn, by the way, which passes underneath the radar. But it is, again, oh my God, this guy's a director. Oh my God, this guy's a vice president. It's sometimes even worse than Facebook. So keep off LinkedIn also. The third point after memory and staying off social media is set realistic goals for yourself. And again, this is where the self-help industry, the morons, have absolutely got this wrong. And they say it because it helps them make money, but I'm telling you, there's nothing more wrong. The fact that this message that you can be whatever you want to be. No, you cannot be whatever you want to be. And as you get older, the space of things you can be, it goes down. So of course, you will read about this inspirational story of this guy at 70 years old who runs the New York Marathon. But remember, things like that are like saying, look at, you know, MS Dhoni making so much money from IPL. So If MS Dhoni can make so much money from IPL, being a cricketer is a good career option, which it isn't. The average guy who plays in Ranji Trophy or who plays in club cricket does not make money. So the overwhelming majority of people who choose to adopt cricket as a career do not make money. It's only a very, very few people. A minuscule percentage of people who make money, serious money, and people point to them. Just like you would think that this is crazy to point to Dhoni and say that is the typical experience of anybody who adopts cricket as a career. It's the same thing with this whole self-help industry and the whole TEDx thing. You know, just because one person has achieved success at a time when you wouldn't expect that person to achieve success does not mean that that can be replicated. So I, for instance, know that I can't run the New York Marathon. Okay, I can't be a porn star. I cannot start a company like Facebook. And I can never look like Vidyut Jamal. I know this. And if I try to do any of these at this point of time, and of course, one of them is obviously not one of my ambitions, I will not be able to attain it. I will not be able to attain it. It doesn't matter how many TEDx talks I listen to or how many times I tell me, you are perfect, you are great, you can do it. No, I cannot do it. I just cannot do it. So one of the things about being an adult is recognizing, you know, when I was younger, my goals in life was that I will marry Kajol and become the Prime Minister of India. Okay. Which is okay to think on these lines. You have to dream big when you're a teenager. You should not behave like a 40-year-old or a 50-year-old when you're a teenager. Again, that's wrong. So, but as you grow older and as you start adulting, as the millennials now say, you reduce that step size of what it is that you can hope for from the future. So ultimately, you know that this step size is going to reduce to a day that will come when your achievement, your goal will be, can I find my dentures? And I don't want to feel any pain in my knees today. So it will come down to this level in some point of your life. So starting from, I want to marry Kajol and I want to become the Prime Minister of India, to I want to walk for 10 minutes without my knees exploding. Okay. So your ambition or your goals of success will vary from this to that over the course of your life. And now most of my listeners, I believe, are my age. You're somewhere in the middle of that path. So for us, it is important for us to realize, based on our understanding and based on our memory, again, I'm coming back to the memory, the path we have walked as to what it is that we can do and what it is we can't do. So again, let's take a personal example. When the blog took off, I think that was the time that I decided, because this is something which I've always wanted to be. I wanted to be I would have said, if at 20, I would have said I wanted to be an author, and I became an author. So I did have a published book and 5 published books. So in that respect, I did exactly what I thought I would do. But what I actually meant, and again, this is another problem when you attain goals, is when you attain the goal, you realize, this is not exactly what I meant. I meant something else. So what I actually meant was I wanted to be a full-time author, somebody who can write for a living, who doesn't have to go to work, who doesn't have to report to a boss, who can be an author. And the life that I wanted was to be a full-time author, to talk to people, to give lectures, to talk about writing, maybe not dance a reality show, not really, but somewhere around there, to be a public intellectual. And at some point of my life, I felt that this was something which was attainable. Looking at the way I was progressing, I felt that, you know, this is, it's, again, it was a tough thing, but again, I was younger. So I think I had the license to dream bigger at that point of time, that this was something which I would be able to attain. But then, and I made a lot of sacrifices in my professional life in order to do that. After I graduated from my PhD, I decided to choose a kind of work environment where I could have, you know, evenings to myself, that I wouldn't have to worry with development. You know, I'm essentially a software guy. I did my PhD in software. Now I work in cybersecurity. But if you work in essentially development, you want to work in Google, Facebook, or any of these places, you have to, you know, put in the hours if you really want to get anywhere. And you have to deliver on code. You have to deliver on products. And that is not something which somebody who does 40 hours can do. That is not a 40-hour thing. That is a 60-hour thing. And if you want to be successful in that field, you have to commit to putting in 60 hours week after week, minimum. And unless you really enjoy it, I don't think you're wasting your 60 hours of your life. The best years of your life is really worth it. So for me, the thing that I enjoyed was writing. I didn't enjoy writing code. I didn't enjoy doing architecting of systems. I do it for a living and I don't hate it. There are certain things about it I like, but it's nowhere close to the absolute total joy that I feel when I sit down and write something like Sultan of Delhi, when I write about characters and places and people and I create worlds. So I feel like a god at that point of time because I'm creating something that doesn't exist. And for me, that's an enormous amount of enjoyment. It's possibly the thing that I enjoy doing the most in life. I'm never happier than when I'm writing fiction or when I'm writing even blogs where I'm writing opinion pieces. Perhaps a little less happy. I think I enjoy writing fiction the most. But then I realized that this is not something that I could persist with as a career. This just, it wasn't happening. And so I had a steady readership, but the market wasn't expanding enough for me to, you know, I could go on doing this and dreaming about it. And maybe later on at the age of 60, maybe I would break through and then you would hear me on TEDx talking about you should never give up on your dreams. And I would give you a J.K. Rowling-esque kind of story about, you know, how I was rejected, but everyone. But you see that there's always the selection bias, right? You always hear about the people who have succeeded and you never hear about the people who failed. And if you did, then you don't hear because people don't like to talk about their failures because they feel this pressure to talk about their successes and to present themselves their successes when they even themselves, they don't know that they aren't, at least even not by their own definitions. So I felt at some point of time around 2017 that it just wasn't worth it anymore. I did still enjoy writing fiction, but I just felt terrible dealing with publishers and the media. And it was just downright toxic at that point of time. It was not just frustrating. I mean, you can cope up with frustration, but you cannot cope up with downright toxicity. And it just made me fundamentally unhappy. And so which brings me to the set yourself realistic goals. I try to set myself, again, I'm not at the stage where I'm telling myself, you know, will I be able to locate my dentures? I haven't reached that stage yet. But I try to set myself, you know, very small goals, which are not as ambitious as they used to be. And why do I do that? Because number four, which brings me number four, which is the key to happiness is to recognize the randomness of the universe. So when we grew up, we've been always told, whether through story or through anecdotes, that good things happen to good people. That if you study, you'll make money. If you do this, if you do good to other people, other good things will be done to you. And I teach the same thing to my daughter too, because it's the right thing to do. However, what I will not tell her right now, because she'll discover it herself one day, neither did my parents tell me this, is the world is absolutely random. Okay. This is absolutely random. There is absolutely no cause and effect from your actions to how the world reacts to you. So we expect, we have this, we, it's not a religious thing, but all of us expect that there's some kind of benign arbiter who sits above. Whether you believe in God or not, there are many people who don't believe in God, but still expect that there is some benign arbiter who's sitting above. He looks at you and he looks through your HR file and sees, oh, what has this guy done this year? Okay, he gets an increment. Okay, that just does not happen. And, you know, I tell myself this, but yet tomorrow I'll expect that something good will happen to me because I did something good. Shit will happen to you. Again, because the world is random. Again, it doesn't mean that just because shit happened to you today, shit will happen to you tomorrow. So when I feel depressed, and I usually feel depressed and sad, I hesitate to use the word depressed because when people say it's a clinical condition, I've not been evaluated for that. But I'm just saying down, sad. It is worse at night. I don't know why it is. Maybe there's something hormonal, I don't know. But you know, if you're feeling terrible, sleep. Okay, sleep and get up the next morning and I feel much better in the morning because I tell myself the universe is random. And just because, you know, things haven't been great doesn't necessarily mean that things will not be good today. We kind of think that there is that, you know, that things are dependent and they are not. Every day is a new coin toss of an unbiased coin. Tell yourself this in the morning and you might come back and have another miserable day. And it's most likely to happen, which is why you feel terrible at night. But then the next day comes and the coin gets tossed again. The fifth thing is, don't let others guilt you into happiness. One of the most terrible things, and often happens from people who mean you good, is people look at you and say, why are you sad? There's nothing for you to be sad about. Look at, you know, you have a good job, you have a good family, yeah, I get that. It's not that I'm not thankful for that. But the fact is, again, this is the nature of happiness, that you have a baseline for what happiness is. And you try to go above that. What you have now becomes your baseline. And we all know that. So don't try to guilt me into lowering my baseline, because it's just not going to happen. So don't let others guilt you into happiness. Don't let others make you pretend that you're happy. That if there's anything worse than being unhappy, is having to pretend that you're happy when you're not. And of course, we have to pretend. We have to pretend at work. You get paid at work. You don't bring your issues to work. At work, you have to understand that you are a resource. You come there, you provide a certain service, and you go home. So you are not a person at work. And there's no other ways of putting it. So it's not at work. In work, if you have to pretend to be happy, then you pretend to be happy. And tell yourself they're paying you your salary for that. They're paying you a salary for that subterfuge. However, when you're at home and when you're off the clock, please do not feel any obligation to pretend to be happy. You could have to pretend to be happy for your children or for your wife, but some point of time you have to stop that and you have to accept that, yes, I am unhappy. And you definitely let nobody guilt you into feeling happy, because you're not going to be happy. You will have to then defend your unhappiness. And trust me, it's not a place where you want to be. And the last thing, I've saved the most controversial part of it for the last. This is really controversial, but avoid having friends. You know, human beings suck. In 43 years of my life, this is the one thing that I can tell you, is human beings in general suck. Okay. Now, don't get me wrong. I love talking to people. Okay. I love talking to people. You know, I'm doing a podcast, for crying out loud. I'm talking to people. And I love to meet people when I go to India. But I like to keep everything at a certain level. I like to keep it on issues. And that's why I find it difficult when I'm here to go to random Indian events that are done by NRIs here in India, because I cannot connect to a person unless we have previously connected on an issue. So I am absolutely perfectly fine, and I look out for people who have read my blog and my book, because I automatically know that there are some things that we agree and disagree on, and we can converse based on that. But I cannot go and open myself up as a person to you, because I'm not looking to be your friend. And it sounds terrible when I say it, but I've been burned so many times. I don't say it just like that. So I used to be attached to people a lot, but I've seen that more often than not, it is an extremely risky proposition to open yourself up to people. And, you know, it is a risky practice. It is like driving without a seatbelt. Okay. You might feel great. I don't know why you would feel great driving without. You know, it's an inconvenience. But what I'm trying to say is that if I avoid at 43 any kind of emotional bonding with friends, and I've seen this, you know, because people judge you. They judge you based on your opinions. They judge you based on everything, and you. It's whatever you're expecting, you're not going to get it at a time that you need it, in terms of emotional support, in terms of just being there, in terms of being friends. It's not going to happen. If you want, you know, again, I'm not saying that I love to talk to people on issues. I love to talk to converse with people. I'm not a misanthrope. I'm just saying that for my happiness, it's good that I don't trust people. I don't trust people beyond a certain level. I'm not saying trust. I'm not saying giving them my passwords. I'm not going to give them anybody that. But I'm talking about, you know, trust them with secrets. Trust them with how I feel. Trust them with the real reasons for my sadness. trust them with my actual failures, the stuff that I will not tell anyone. I will never do that ever again. And I want to be, you know, kicked in my testicles if I ever am found to be doing that. So I can tell myself, don't do it. So again, if I'm going to emotionally bond with anyone, I would, as I said, I would prefer to bond with a dog. If I'm going to look for emotional support, I really feel that, you know, there's nothing better than having a dog. And again, so for those of you as in, why has Arnab suddenly become obsessed with dogs, for crying out loud? It's a guy that we should talk about dogs. Actually, I didn't like dogs before a year. But after, you know, based on some of these terrible experiences that I've had, I've come to, as I tried to understand the way, you know, dogs work, the way their brains work, I realized that, you know, if you're really somebody who finds a sort of gratification with bonding with any entity other than a book or a movie, and I'm coming to that, is, you know, bond with a pet. You know, the pet will not let you down because the pet isn't wired that way. The pet will not, in general, will not let you down. So in general, I believe that it's not a good idea to essentially project your weakness out to other people, hoping for emotional support. I think this is the easiest way to have your heart broken. So when what are you going to seek happiness in? And seek happiness in reading a good book. Seek happiness in what, you know, watching a good movie. Some people, and I'm not that kind of a guy, but, you know, some people seek happiness in going to the gym and in exercising, you know. That makes them feel good about themselves. So there are many, many, many things available in this world that will make you feel good about yourself that does not involve another human being. And I think this generation has grown up with big families, with joint families. We've seen that happiness comes off from being part of a community. But that was an age without social media. That was a very different age. And I think as we evolve, progress, or devolve, I don't know how you want to look at it, there is a case, as we've discussed this before in the podcast, when I grew up, we used to think of employment as a lifetime thing. It was like getting married. You know, you worked at a place and you worked at it forever. And the only reason why you lost your job was because you were not good enough. Or even that didn't happen if you're working in a government company, of course. But it was basically a relationship for life. And that's not the case anymore. It's a gig economy. Whenever you go to a job, there is no compulsion on the company to retain you. Even if you might be a very, very high performer, you might be the best employee that they have. But if the product that you're working on isn't making money, they're going to let you go. It's not a personal thing at all. And it happens. I mean, the main thing is, if you're good, you'll find somebody else who is willing to pay your value. It's going to pay you market value. So, but you have to get rid of the thing that, you know, I will work at the same place. So there is no loyalty from the employer, and there's no loyalty going the other way too. You know, you look for the best deal that's available to you. You don't care if, you know, this company did so much for me. No, that doesn't work anymore. Company did so much for you because you were needed. That doesn't necessarily mean that they need you tomorrow or that they will need you 1 year from now. So do whatever. I think some of us understand that transactional nature at workplace, but we struggle to understand that it's essentially the same thing with friends. That for me, many of my college friends were friends then because we were all part of a common group. We're all studying together. We all had the same terrors in terms of our professors. We all had the same fears in terms of not getting a job or whatever it was. And that the fact that we were together was not because we liked each other, but we had a common set of problems. It made sense for us to stick together. We were kind of like a pack of dogs, you know, in the wild. And that we mistake for friendship. It's not. It's part of being in a group with common interests and a common enemy. And then after some time, you know, all of us got married and moved away. And we struggle. I mean, I struggle to have a conversation with any of them. I don't think, okay, yeah, sure, we can talk about the good old days. But how long can you talk about good old days? You know, half an hour, maybe? After that, these guys I don't recognize. I mean, they're other people. They have totally different. They're in a different world now, and that happens with all friendships. It happens with all friendships, unless you and your friend like that kind of tied together at the hip and do everything together. At which point of time, maybe you're not friends anymore. But unless that, it's that the worlds. This is natural. It's not because anybody is inherently evil. It's that the worlds diverge. Our histories diverge because you and your friend, which brings me back to the first point, are making a different set of memories. You are making a different set of memories. And after some point of time, this divergence happens because you are different people now, because you have a different set of memories. Not because you both exist, both of you are thinking about your existence in the Descartesian way, but because your memories, the things that you've chosen to keep, and the things that you've chosen to throw away. And you will find increasingly that memories of you are the things that your friend has chosen to throw away. And there's a reason for that. And it's natural. And you've done the same thing too. So the point is, don't define your happiness through friendship. Keep friends at a certain, don't let them... I was going to use the word penetrate, but no. Don't let them, get under your skin. Have conversations with them. Talk about general things. Like I'm talking to you guys about general things. Talk about Modi. Talk about OAC. After some time, you won't be friends also, by the way, if you keep on talking.
Right.
But that's okay. There'll always be another guy who you can talk about Modi and you can talk about OAC and you can talk about Trump. Don't talk about yourself. See, that is where trouble starts. So that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed this different kind of episode and I look forward to listening to your feedback. Please feel free to write in as to, how wrong I got it or hopefully that you agree with at least most of what I said today.
I for one, I think I agree with you especially on a couple of points. When you spoke about the randomness of the universe, totally get that. One of the things I keep telling my elder daughter, she must be, tired of this cliched phrase I use. I keep telling her, life is unfair. Get used to it. Throughout. So, and poor girl.
What do you agree with?
I don't think there's anything which I disagree with. I think I would just reprioritize a few of them. For example, life is unfair, get used to it. That's my number one mantra where,
there was no priority, by the way, in this order of things. The order of things was...
Okay. Fair enough then.
So there were just things. So it was not that, think about your past was the most important thing. There was nothing like that.
Yeah, for me, for example, thinking about the past doesn't work for me. I mean, it doesn't make me happy. So I do different things. The thing is, I'll tell you what. I have a very simple mantra for staying happy. And if you had to look at my credential-wise, I would say I'm pretty much always happy. And I consider myself a glass half-full guy. So I ensure that there's always something I look forward to in the immediate future. As short as within a month. So, and I try to keep it as simple as possible. Like you mentioned this out too, like looking forward to a movie or a vacation or, a loved one's visit. My brother was visiting last month, and I look forward to that for a good 2 or 3 months. And for me personally, the joy I get from anticipation of an event is way better than the eventual happiness itself. So, maybe we are going on a vacation, 2 weeks from now. And I know that the wait for the vacation itself is going to make me so happy that the actual vacation might not, it might rain because we are going in the monsoon to a bloody beach. So, who knows, it might get rained out. Even when you say, don't look at, friends, I would put it in a different way. Where I don't give the key to make me happy to other people, because if I'm giving the power to somebody else to make me happy, I'm also giving them the power to make me sad. easier said than done. Your family and close friends obviously will be able to influence your mood, but I try to, you know, keep the center of happiness to myself and ensure that only I'm in control of my happiness. But again, we are all privileged, and like you said, the word which you use, depression, we are not in, thankfully, any of those clinically depressed stage or something where you are not in control of your emotions. Here, for the rest of us, I guess these things would work. But yeah, if these don't work, I would again maybe therapy or something might help. I mean, I'm not even qualified to comment on those. Anyway, I think we went off on a rather heavy note. So
let's do that.
Absolutely. So that's been a show. And I don't know about you listeners, but for me, this is an episode that I would want to bookmark and listen to every once in a while. I'm going to do that for sure. And as we wrap up our 50th, and again, like, I want to thank all of you to listening to us, and your attention has been a source of happiness in the past year. So I wish you loads of happiness, and until next time, take care.